Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and this is our continued coverage of the COVID-19 outbreak and what it means for us all. I know this is really inappropriate in a way, but it has to be said. We need support to keep these podcasts running. We need people to give us a hand. It's not exactly what we intended to spend our evenings doing, but if you could head over to Patreon and join us, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. First, a couple of quid will help. Without further ado, Martin.
And I disagree with you. I'd be doing this anyway, Tony.
You'd be doing what? You'd be hiding anyway.
Having remote conversations with people. I'm kind of a bit of a hermit anyway, so it's not going to be too difficult for me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I think we've probably been, we've been probably together more or less interlinked for a couple of years now. Let's tell the truth. So
we draw lines. Yeah, just to let people know, we do draw lines, Tony.
Yeah. No, we don't like each other, but we're drawn together. That's the problem. Look. We want to get straight in on the breaking news is obviously that there's 40 new cases today. In Ireland, so
I—that's the first I heard now. 40 new cases.
Yeah,
today.
The Republic is 169 and 214 on the island. 23 new males and 17 new females. 25 are associated in the east of the country, 9 in the west, and 6 in the south.
So the whole country.
So it's everywhere. Yeah, and these community transmissions, and this is what's happening now. We need to understand from our own point of view. This is. It is everywhere, and when you're seeing the cases go up, this is not the time. This is not unexpected. This is part of what has happened. We've seen, unfortunately, these spikes across the world. Now, the idea is to try and slow.
I think that's important, Tony. People need to understand that this can be graft. And we are exactly where Italy is. Am I right on that?
Well, per head of capita, you got to look at different countries, how small we are. But where we are now, yeah, we're not far behind some of those countries where they were. However, we've seen Simon Harris and the Vintners Association have closed the pubs from tonight. Martin, it's hard to say that it's the right action, but the government have said that they will take the right action at the right time. Let me finish my point. They haven't made this at the right time, if we're honest, because, you know, when you saw events like Cheltenham, when you saw the right time would have been when we flew Italian rugby supporters over to Dublin, you know, that we needed probably to act more decisively back then. And when you see 40 new cases today, as you said, spread around the country, are we closing the door after the horse is bolted?
All right. Look at it this way, Tony. They've been making moves only under public pressure. Okay, they got rid of Paddy's Day, public pressure. They closed the schools because people were taking their kids out of the schools. Anyway, this was all happening. They're being a reactive government, and there is going to be a time for postmortems, and it's not now.
Yeah.
But because this issue is it's pressing on us, and it's pressing very hard. We need to clarify exactly what they're doing. They're being reactive, Tony. We are being told that being proactive, getting out ahead of this, is the only way. There was a guy from the WHO who did an impromptu speech. He was from Mullingar, I believe.
Sligo, I thought.
Sligo, excuse me. And he spelled it out very clearly. There are no levers you cannot pull right now. None. And in fact, you should pull them all right now and then find more levers to pull and do them quickly and make the decisions quickly. That anybody had to sit down with the Vintners Association and actually discuss with them whether this was the best thing or not to do. It's risible. And 2 weeks from now, we will look back at decisions like this and say, why did it take hours, days, and not just seconds? There's another issue that's there at the moment about letting prisoners out of jail. Just do it, have done with it, get them back, and then impose the isolation. We're all going to be prisoners a bit, and we are.
When you mentioned the prisoners, I think it's only fair to mention that there are 5,500 people in direct provision centres.
There are huge obstacles here. Unless they start getting movement, Tony, and the movement must happen now. It's not that you wait until X number of people are infected or X number of people have died. Let me just point out, it hasn't worked anywhere else to do that. So pull all the levers. Pull them now. I had a nurse friend ring me last night, and she was looking at pictures of Temple Bar because they were everywhere. And she was physically getting sick. Now, we have to protect that line. We're not protecting it. We're not protecting it. It's up to all of us. And if government won't do it, voice it, say it. That's what needs to be done. It's about holding the line. Everything else is immaterial. So, draw a line under everything that's happened so far. Draw a line under. We haven't time for it. And let's move on to, let's do everything fast. Let's do everything within our power. Let's not worry about the expense of saving lives. Let's just save lives.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, I said about Italy and Cheltenham and, you know, what's happening. Yeah, there's no, you know, I was going to say the word post-mortem, but it's really, that's a very grim word in the circumstance. But you know, the time for looking back at what's happened and where it went wrong will come somewhere down the line. But right now, you're right. The focus has to be saving as many lives as possible. And the way we save those lives is by people not acting the gowl, not going to big house parties, not looking at this as an excuse to, you know, everybody get together and sure won't it be grand. I still heard someone today say, sure, it's only the flu. And I'm a lot more, less affected as you are. Let's call a spade a spade.
I disagree with you, Tony. I totally disagree with you. There's young people in hospital. There's young people fighting for their lives right now. Young, fit, healthy people. So I disagree with you. Now, it's a lottery, okay? And your chances of getting it are less. But they're not non-existent. And if you're going around thinking it's non-existent, there are also after effects from every single disease. Do you know SARS has for 11% of people carry SARS trauma with them for the rest of their lives? They actually have treatments that they need for the rest of their lives. This is not an easy ride for anybody.
Yeah, I know that. And I saw that a young person was on a ventilator in a hospital in Dublin. And, you know, all our thoughts go to all of these people at the moment. There are several people that we know are critical. And, you know, and that's the other thing I will say. Be sensible. Don't spread all the fear as well. Don't react to a WhatsApp message and all this nonsense, because it's still flaring up again. And also, keep your sense of humor, folks. Please, like, we've got so much good stuff going on. There are people helping. There are people reaching out. There are people actually, you know, making the best of what is a difficult situation. But, like, we can't turn on each other.
We're in the I'm still believing what government told us last week stage, Tony, when they were saying, look, this will only affect the vulnerable and the old. And that is what they were saying last week. Let's not forget that's what they were saying. And telling people not to worry, carry on as normal. So there's a lot of people still believing that. And within 24 hours, we'll say 48 hours, Leo Varadkar is going to have to go on TV and radio and say, this is a grave situation for our nation. And people are not taking this seriously. And he's going to have to do it. And the one who's not taking it seriously right now is Leo Varadkar.
Well, what I would,
if he just came out and said, this is a very grave situation, and stop giving mixed messages. Simon Harris has given mixed messages again.
Where?
He's saying, his conference earlier on, he said, you know, we're not asking people to bunker in at home. We're saying, you know, exercise social isolation. No, the kids are off school for a reason. They're off school for a reason.
Yeah, I think
that's why they're off.
Yeah, but hang on. It's been very clear, and it's been clear in Italy now on lockdown and Spain on lockdown. You know, yeah, it's okay to practice social. The kids can walk the dog. They just can't walk the dog with their friends. You know, they have to.
Okay. And I'm asking you, hand on heart, and you've been out today. Have you been out today?
Yeah, I did. I did 11 miles.
Okay. How many do you see?
I was surprised. I saw more along the canal than I anticipated, but less than normal. if that makes sense.
Did you see gangs of teenagers and kids together?
No, but I did see gangs of I saw gangs of teenagers yesterday evening, and it was a bit disappointing.
No, it's life-threatening. Let's start using the language that's important here. Let's not start mollycoddling people. You get over this real fast. Get over this stage real fast, this real selfish stage. Fergal Bowers was on earlier on Twitter talking about a mother going around a supermarket with her children. That's to stop. It has to stop.
Yeah, I had to go and pick up something for the car this morning, and it was interesting outside the place I was going into. There was a taxi parked outside, and the young fellow was left in the car. The taxi driver was in inside, and I thought to myself, well, at least he had the decency to leave the young fellow in the car as opposed to bringing
him. Yeah, but there's lots of people not doing that, Tony. There's lots of people not doing it. And Varadkar needs to nip it and nip it now. Can't let this... Every second, every minute is important.
Well, I think this is unfortunately, I do think some of the things now, there's an inevitability about this going up. We've seen 40 today. It will spike this day next week. It will probably be three times the total that it is right now.
So what are we doing waiting for numbers? This is the game that's being played. When X number has symptoms, we trigger X. And that's what happened. No. Let's get out ahead of this. Let's do what the WHO have said.
I just want to look at it from international news, just because it sounds like we're blowing this out of proportion, but we're not. There are 2,000 new cases in Spain today. 100 people lost their lives in Spain in the last 24 hours.
Jesus Christ. Did you see them clearing Benidorm last night?
I did. And I'm very familiar with as I said, I spoke to my friends my eldest is named after a good friend of mine in Barcelona, and I spoke to them, and they are hunkering down. And you know, it was funny talking to them on the phone and realizing that this is, I could see the streets that I know so well being so empty, and it's a terrifying thought. 100 people in one day. Italy, I think, was 176 people passed away from coronavirus. I mean, this
Italy had an awful day yesterday, and you know what? Italy's day today is going to be worse because it's not near the peak yet. And we're no different. We're on the same trajectory. Every second matters. Every second matters. And it matters because the health service is the front line in this war.
Martin, hang on. I'm just getting the Italian statistics in for today. It's 368 people have died today.
Fuck's sake. I tell you, look, we can't act soon enough. Look, please get your acts together. Get your kids away from other kids. If you want to take them for a walk, middle of a field somewhere where there's no one else around. And if they're touching anything, clean it down afterwards. I mean, this is, we really got to take this seriously, and they need to step it up. John Crown is not wrong. The WHO is not wrong.
1,372 new cases in the UK.
Look, however bad it is here, the UK is going to be awful.
Well, you do know we're going into an interview shortly with Don Foster in London.
Yeah, it's going to be awful. And I would encourage our friends and neighbours up north to do what's right for them and their families. You are a family member first before you are a loyalist, a nationalist, a unionist. You are a family member. Take care of yourself and take care of your family.
Listen, folks, we are going into an interview now with Don Foster, writer, commentator, and friend of the pod, and we will bring you as many views from across the globe as we can over the coming days. Please continue to look after yourselves, as Martin said, and please try and support us in this time, because we really could do with the people giving us a hand. Stay tuned. Don will be on shortly. Thanks. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by commentator, writer, and friend of the pod, Don Foster. Don, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you? I don't have coronavirus yet, I hope.
Oh, listen, it's it must be. I know, as someone like yourself who's so aware of Irish politics, and then you look across the water and you actually see what we're doing. How do you feel about our reaction versus the reaction in the UK?
Well, Ireland actually seem to be sensible. They seem to be looking at what's happening, looking at what other countries are doing. And obviously, the number of people affected in Ireland is a lot lower than it is in the UK at the moment. And so you essentially look at what Ireland are doing, so closing the schools, thinking about what they can do to try and contain it, to try and stop people from spreading it in the community. And then you look at Britain and it's just completely different. And I think the big issue, you know, I mean, obviously the border is always an issue, but, you know, essentially the UK are, even though, you know, Northern Ireland is devolved, even though Stormont have certain powers, like the UK don't seem to be thinking about the fact that they share a border, like a literal border with Ireland. And so you essentially have this small landmass that the UK have jurisdiction over, linked to Ireland, and they haven't thought, you know, maybe we should try and fall in line so that we can stop spread that way. You know, there's a huge number of people who live on the border, who cross the border to get groceries, to work, to send their kids to school there. And it just seems just completely insane to me that obviously Ireland closed their schools, but there are a lot of people in the north who send their kids to school over the border, and vice versa, and it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I think most of the public in the UK are very, very concerned that the UK's response is so different to everybody else. And over again, from the very beginning, the government has said we're led by science. And that's increasingly, you know, being revealed as a complete lie. So they are relying very, very heavily on behavioural scientists. I mean, in 2010, when David Cameron came in, he had this big idea for what he called the Big Society, which was essentially a way of trying to cut back public services as much as possible and then replacing them with volunteers. And that's obviously designed to try and save the government money. The Conservatives have never been a fan of the big state, but you know, when it comes to volunteers, like, A, you have to rely on the goodwill of people, but also you're getting people who don't have, you know, proper in-depth technical training. And, you know, David Cameron really, really wanted this to happen. Didn't really happen too much, but he used what he called the nudge unit, which are behavioural scientists who try and use certain certain things to try and make people behave in a certain way.
I remember they got it. They got their own podcast on Freakonomics one time. But go on, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Completely. I mean, essentially, the government are trying to play Freakonomics with the population. And the nudge unit kind of, you know, it was kind of held to one side. Everyone kind of forgot about it. The Big Society never worked, even though Cameron had about 14 different launches for it. And now Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings, his kind of right-hand man, are trying to use the nudge unit instead of, you know, proper scientific advice on how they can actually, you know, stop the spread of coronavirus. And it just seems completely stupid. Every other country is looking at closing down schools, stopping mass gatherings, looking at the fact that one of the biggest ways that coronavirus is spread is obviously, you know, using public transport. And I work from home, luckily, but every Tuesday I have to go go and do radio. And when I go there, the tube's pretty empty. I've got to arrive for about 5 o'clock. So you get on the tube and there's about one seat for every 10 people. But when I leave at 6 o'clock to go home and get on the tube, it's so packed. I mean, I get on at London Bridge, which is on the Northern line. So it's kind of like halfway down that line. And every time I get on, I'm absolutely crammed against the door. My face is in somebody's armpit, if I'm lucky. If I'm unlucky, it's in somebody else's face. And you're absolutely rammed on, like you're in completely close quarters. Every part of your body is touching somebody else's. If somebody coughs, then, you know, there are about 10 faces right, you know, right next to them. And so, you know, like, so the Nudge Unit are essentially trying to think about what they can do to stop the spread of the virus. But, I mean, if you look at the Nudge Unit, what they should be doing, if they work at all, is managing to convince people not to stockpile. That should be their ideal thing, not actually working out how to stop the spread of a virus. That should be down to doctors and scientists. And so the fact that the government are relying on behavioural scientists rather than, you know, proper, you know, medical scientists is a huge, huge worry. And I think it's a big, big, big gamble with the health of people.
Colossal gamble.
Essentially, what the government has thought is that if they lock everything down and it doesn't spread, then the government will say, you know, clearly we didn't need to do this at all. But the bigger risk is that we do nothing, it spreads horrifically. And once it spreads, you know, essentially we look like Italy. Mm. And when you look at all the stats, obviously, like the UK at the moment is about 2 weeks behind Italy. So we're in a really, really crucial time, and they're relying on behavioural scientists rather than medical scientists.
It's terrifying, Don, because when you look at it in those, in through that prism, like we're here in Ireland now, where they've just tonight they've announced that the pubs are and are going to close from midnight tonight for a couple of weeks, and we're actually shouting, "You're not moving quick enough." You know, we look across the water and we're seeing, you know, there was a Patrick's Day parade in Manchester today. The actual centre of Patrick's Day world is outside my door, and it's not happening. You know, our festival is gone. It's just so, and the idea of this herd immunity. What herd immunity? My understanding is that you need to effectively to have herd immunity, you need 60-70% of the population to contract the virus, and this virus has a kill rate of about 3%.
Yeah, absolutely, it's completely insane. So apparently today, Matt Hancock, the health minister, was telling people off within the government, because obviously last week the government said that their plan was to hopefully develop herd immunity. Yeah. And it's stupid for a number of reasons. I mean, the first thing is that herd immunity works when you have a vaccine. So, you know, when it comes to something like measles, nearly everybody's vaccinated, so that if somebody does catch measles, it doesn't spread because everybody else is immune because there's a vaccine.
Yeah.
But without a vaccine, you essentially need most of the population to contract it. And, you know, the chief medical officer was the person who came out with that 60% stat that you mentioned. But in order for that to happen, then, you know, you need, you know, 2/3 of the population to get it. In the meantime, obviously, the kill rate is quite high. When you look at Italy, I think the death rate is around about, you know, 6%. And, you know, I think the big problem is that we don't know very much about this virus at the moment. So saying herd immunity will be okay, we can all work it out, there isn't really any evidence that once you catch it, you won't catch it again.
Yeah.
There have been quite a few cases of people who seem to have got it, were tested positive, and have then caught it again. And again, we don't know much about it, so the test for it is still quite shaky. So we don't know whether the people who contracted it twice, you know, by chance, got a false positive and have now got it for real. But if you have 2/3 of people catching it, then you're still going to get a huge number of people who are dead. So if you're looking at, you know, 2/3 of the population getting it, you know, about 45 million people, then that means that close to 1 million people are probably going to die. And that's going to be older people, it's going to be immune compromised people, anybody who's got a heart condition, a lung condition, you know, anybody who is, you know, disabled and has a certain condition, older people, for instance. So, you know, today as well, the government talked about the possibility of trying to get everybody who is, you know, 70 or older into self-quarantine, and that means pretty much all of the House of Lords. It means a huge number of MPs. So Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell will presumably get locked up and told not to come in. So the herd immunity idea is incredibly callous, because you're essentially gambling with a virus that we know very little about, but you're also going to kill a huge number of people.
Yeah.
And you know, it's such a bizarre way for the government to act. I mean, firstly, the UK has the lowest rate of intensive care beds, you know, that help people who are in real stress when it comes to breathing. So the UK have a much lower.
We're right there beside you on that. We're at the bottom with the UK in terms of ICU beds, which is terrifying.
And obviously the UK for the past 10 years have had austerity. So we've seen public services being cut to the bone. We've seen, you know, the NHS have really, really had a, you know, really rough time of it. They've cut the number of beds massively. And essentially when you look at the UK, what you've seen for 10 years is conservatives trying to cut public services to the bare minimum so they can just about carry on with as little money as possible going into it. And the big problem there, obviously, is that when you have, you know, when you have a pandemic or a natural disaster or, you know, even a terrorist attack, all it takes is for one thing out of the ordinary to make the whole thing unravel. And that's what we're seeing now.
Yeah, I'm reminded of, I think it's Professor Wilkinson's The Spirit Level, where he said the deeper the inequality in a society, the deeper the distrust. And it strikes me that, you know, after, as you've really well laid out, 10 years of austerity and cuts to public services, there is an element of, and I hate to be cynical, but there, it's almost like, well, look, we'll evoke the bulldog spirit, the blitz, you know, we survived the blitz but when it all falls over, you know, there's going to be money to be made, you know, there'll be a privatization of features of the NHS and things like that. And maybe I'm being conspiratorial, but it just strikes me as viewing it from afar as something that would worry me if I was, because we envy your NHS, and then we see what's happening now. It's a bit scary.
No, absolutely. No, I think you're completely right. I mean, over and over again, you know, politicians and right-wing commentators have evoked the spirit of the Blitz. And there's a really weird pathology in Britain that's mostly sprung up around Brexit, where, you know, people who weren't even born when World War II happened seem in their head to be utterly convinced that they personally went to war, they personally survived the Blitz.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can already see the government, like, making hay with what's happened. So some of the things they've announced, such as being able to, you know, giving the police special powers to arrest people and detain them if they've got coronavirus. And I think that essentially the government are going to see this as an opportunity to bring in emergency powers for, you know, saying that it will be for the duration of coronavirus. But it's, you know, very unclear whether or not they will actually repeal them afterwards. And you can see from the, you know, British government's response that rather than thinking, how can we stop everybody from catching this disease, how can we stop deaths, etc., it's very, very clear that you know, Boris Johnson said in Breakfast TV last Monday that, you know, the government are thinking about trying to strike a balance between stopping this but also carrying on as normal. So it's obvious that when it comes to the government's response, clearly they're very, very deeply in bed with, you know, big private companies and commerce, and the government seem to be caring a bit more about how to make sure that the economy doesn't take a hit rather than, you know, the actual populace themselves. So it seems as if they're happy for, you know, their response to be quite slow, as long as it means that the economy carries on as normal, when every other country across Europe, you know, Ireland included, is taking steps to make sure as few lives as possible are lost. Whereas, you know, the government seem more concerned about profit and watching the stock market and making sure that their big donors in big business, you know, all of the millionaires they pal about with, aren't put out, you know, by any of this. So it seems that they're a lot more concerned about making sure that business is fine than, you know, people.
Yeah, Don, I think you've summed it up lovely there. Look, Don, I won't take any more of your time. I really appreciate it. Mind yourself. This is going to be like you know, it's quite clear. This is unprecedented. These are unprecedented times, and you know, we're preaching here. You know, social distancing and making sure people are. But like, I can only hope that your government comes online, because, and you're quite right to point out at the outset that we share a border, and that makes things even more difficult for us. So please mind yourself, and hopefully we'll keep in touch.
Yep, if I survive.
Thanks very much.
Thanks. Bye.